Welcome to Haste, the official Obsidian Portal podcast, where we bring you the latest and greatest news in the tabletop RPG industry in less time than it takes you to set up for combat. I'm your host, Jerry, and tonight I'm joined by Eric Ostley of the Gamers Table podcast. How's it going, Eric?
Good, Jerry. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for coming on. And so any of you guys listening, if you don't know about the Gamers Table podcast, it's you guys just do an all-around, basically, everything that gamers would talk about in kind of a round table discussion, right? You guys do movies, board games, role-playing games, the whole gamut. Am I correct?
Yeah, that's right. What we just basically bill ourselves as gamers talking about games and things that interest gamers, basically.
Right on. And it's good stuff. I like your guys' show. I just caught up on a few episodes today. So make sure you guys check them out at gamerstable.com. And let's jump into the topic, shall we?
Sure.
Oh, I should also add that the D20 Monkey Caption Contest is over. We'll have a new one up soon. And congrats to Robert, who is our winner, with the quote of, I believe it was, "Don't stare directly into his nipples." So take that as you will. So anyways, moving on. So our first topic of the night is more about the Iron Kingdoms role-playing game from Privateer Press. Now, I know that we've talked about this at least grazingly a time or two and maybe had it as a topic once, but this is kind of a big deal because at Gen Con, Iron Kingdoms did so well at Privateer Press's booth. I believe they sold out within like 2 or 3 hours the first day of Gen Con. They have decided to move the release date of the game from October to September 19th. So that means, you know, in just a little shy of a week and a half here, probably a week or so by the time this podcast goes up, you will be able to get your hands on the Iron Kingdoms RPG, which is coined as Full Metal Fantasy. It's set in the Iron Kingdoms world, the same place where Hordes and War Machine is set. And I know they did this before, and it was a D20 system, I believe. And I believe that's how Privateer Press got their start. I think that was the first kind of stuff they did. I could also be totally wrong, but we'll find out next week because Simon Berman from Privateer Press will be on the show, and we're going to talk in depth about the Iron Kingdoms RPG. But our news bite for the day is that it is coming faster than we thought. Now, Eric, do you have any experience with the Iron Kingdoms RPG for, you know, the 3.x, the D20 system when it was out, or you know, even this newer one?
No, well, I looked through the books when it was the D20 system. I looked through it. Privateer Press has always intrigued me because I would consider myself a Warhammer guy. So, mm-hmm. You know, the Privateer Press is building this momentum that I think is taking the place of a lot of disenfranchised war gamers. And I mean, just going to Gen Con and seeing their booth, I mean, those guys are printing money at that place, you know, just the amount of sales that they're doing. I mean, just them selling out of their role-playing game, that just exemplifies that.
Yeah. But, yeah, I agree. I mean, I am one of those people. I am a disenfranchised Warhammer player, and I don't have enough time to paint an entire, you know, 40, 50 orcs to run an army or carry around that Bible of a rule book. Like,
right.
Everything about their product seems, you know, quick and fast and stuff. And I hear that the new Iron Kingdoms RPG, I have the book. I haven't finished reading it or even really touched the surface, but I'm told, and from what I've read, the combat in it is a lot like the war game, and people seem to love the war game's combat system, so it's already got a lot going for it in my book.
Yeah, that's what I've heard too. That you could do the combat on the table as if you were playing the war game itself. So mm-hmm. I think that's something that's really kind of cool about this system, is that it allows you to transcend the role playing game or the tabletop game. You know, just you could do either or you could do a mix of both.
Yeah, that's very cool. It's kind of like a gateway into, you know, both sides of, or you know, two different facets of the hobby, I suppose. And yeah. It probably handles full scale war better than most systems, right? Because a lot of role playing systems don't handle instances where there's, you know, dozens and dozens of combatants at once. So.
Right. Yeah, your mass combat systems are usually pretty lame. So I also see it as a way to get your person who will play a tabletop war game to actually role play, because there's always that stigma of, you know, I'll play the miniature game, but I'm not going to play a role playing game. And yeah. I think having the two tie together is a good way to, you know, give them a taste of it with something that they already like.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I think that's it for that topic. It'll be out soon, guys. We'll be talking even more about it next week, so stay tuned for that. What's our next topic for the night, Eric?
13th Age has a Kickstarter called 13 True Ways, and what it is a supplement for the 13th Age role-playing game that they're trying to put out. It's Rob Heinsoo and Jonathan Tweed are the spearheading this, which are, they're, of course, they're the designers behind 13th Age anyway. And it looks really cool. It's adding more races and things like that to the game, which is, you know, anytime you have a role-playing game, you want to have things like more options and things like that. And I think that kind of falls into that mold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were saying on the Kickstarter that this is kind of like a, you know, I think it was Rob Heinsoo that said, you know, back in the day, when a supplement came out for a game, it was kind of like the latest and greatest best ideas that the designers had on their brain. And this is kind of the same thing. And it's also, this 13 True Ways is meant to showcase, like, what you can really do with the system, like its strong points and how it really, you know, like, what it was meant to do type thing. And it's got, you know, it's got content for players as well as GMs, which is always, you know, it's always good in my book to be able to have a book that serves more than one purpose, because a lot of times you're only putting out books that one person needs to read. And so, you know, it's good for business. It's also good for everybody that plays the game, as opposed to one fifth of the people that play the game, or whatever right. the average group size is.
Yeah, so. I also think it's actually kind of funny, because anybody who knows anything about Dungeons and Dragons knows that Jonathan Tweed and Rob Heinsoo were behind 3rd and 4th edition Dungeons and Dragons, and 13th Age is it's their brainchild of trying to take the things they love about the systems that they were spearheading and adding more of more of a rules light, almost an right. indie game feel to it, where it's based on storytelling and things like that. I find that really interesting, because, of course, you know, a lot of people think that 3rd and 4th edition Dungeons & Dragons took away from the storytelling aspect of it. I find it fascinating that the guys who were really behind those two editions are spearheading a new game that really focuses on storytelling.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of from what I've been reading on Twitter, somebody said the other day, they're like, so, you know, Wizards dropped 3.5 D&D, and then Pathfinder happened because Paizo picked it up, and now it's like, oh, well, Wizards has dropped 4th edition D&D, and now, you know, 13th Age is the solution to, I don't know, there's a lot of comparisons being made from 4th edition to 13th Age. I don't know, because I haven't played the system yet. I've grazed through the rules. So I would be interested if any of our listeners have played and they've also played a lot of 4th edition, if you guys can make any kind of comparisons to kind of enlighten me on what that is. Maybe, Eric, did you play a lot of 4th?
I played more 3rd and 3.5. I have played 4th. I didn't really care for it because of just how long it took to resolve combat and things like that. And mm-hmm. from what I've seen of 13th Age, they've taken the aspect of combat and sped it up quite a bit. So, I don't know, it's worth a look, I think, at least just to try it out. Because, I mean, there's a lot of people, once they announced, you know, 13th Age, a lot of people were really interested in trying it out. And I think that I'm definitely one of them. I haven't had a chance to really look at the book, but I've heard good things. I know some people that have played it, and they're constantly trying to talk me into playing it, so...
You should take them up on it then.
Right.
Well, yeah. So 13th Age expansion Kickstarter. Really, this expansion is what's kind of interested me in the system more than the initial announcement. I don't know why. Maybe it's because I spent too much time on Kickstarter. But anyways, so yeah, guys, check it out. We'll put a link up in the show notes. And so we'll jump into the last topic of the night. And the last topic is just a quick, cool something that I found over at Stargazer's World recently. And it was an article entitled Stuff for the Traveling DM. And it's this Bluetooth audio cube. And I can't remember who makes it. I'm at a loss what brand it is. But it's just basically, you know, it's a little cube that you can hook it up USB, and you can power it USB, or you can use batteries, or you can use Bluetooth to, you know, and the idea was, if you use music in your games, you can just set this little cube out on the table and, you know, have your ambience music or whatever it is going on. And I thought that was really cool, because I try to use music in my games. I used to do it regularly, more so. It's kind of spotty, but whenever I tried it, I always had, you know, like a little set of speakers and the speaker wire, and then I never knew whether to like run it underneath my GM screen or not use the GM screen, and then I would end up, you know, like knocking it over, or it would come unplugged and this, that, and the other. And then it was always, you know, next to me, and then people at the end of the table might not be able to hear it that well because you don't turn it up that loud. You don't want it to be overbearing. So I thought it was a cool idea. You get this little cube, hook it up Bluetooth to your tablet or your phone or whatever, stream your music to it and set it, you know, in the middle of the table or in some other convenient place, assuming that it doesn't sound totally terrible. I don't know. I didn't read any reviews on it, but, you know, it seems like a cool thing. Now, Eric, do you use music or any kind of like atmospheric things when you run your games?
I have in the past. It's one of those things. I'm going to show my age here, but I remember back in the day listening to the Conan the Barbarian soundtrack on audio tape. And we would play that over and over and over in the background. And as weird as it sounds, you know, you think, oh, well, what difference does music make, you know, in the background? It really actually does set the mood. And if you have something like this where you can tailor it to, you know, especially with your modern, you know, smartphone and things like that, where you can switch back and forth through different musics really fast, I think it's a really cool thing that you can do to kind of set the mood, because I think mood is something that's very much overlooked when it comes to a shared storytelling experience.
I agree. It helps everybody kind of stay on the same page. Like, you're painting a mental picture, but at least with some form of, you know, audible cue, everybody is hearing the same thing. And so I think it helps that cohesion, as long as you don't overdo it. Like, right, you know, not blaring and everything like that, but
right, or start using. I mean, sometimes like people like to use sound effects and things like that, which you could do with the audio cube also, but sometimes those get a little over the top, you know.
Yeah, like the sword clang noise. You know, you spam it all
right.
The time.
Like, as long as the game master has control of the sounds and not the players, because I know firsthand that the players would end up doing outrageous things with those. So.
Yeah. Those players, ruining everything.
Ruining my game.
Yeah. So that's it for topics. We're going to move into the tip, which is not actually an Obsidian Portal tip tonight. I figured we'd change things up a bit. Micah often likes to give his own little pieces of advice in the tip section. But since he's not here tonight, I'm taking over. And my tip, my non-Obsidian Portal tip this week, is some recently acquired wisdom of mine, and that's when you're starting a new campaign, try and come up with an end. Like, it seems like plain, simple, you know, idiot-proof advice, but if you're like me, you dream up a campaign or whatever it is you want to run, and you're like, yeah, and we'll play once a week forever, and you know, for years and years down the road, we'll look back at when we were level one, and we'll have this awesome, epic... No, like, that's not going to happen. And it's really hard to continue writing something where you don't know where it's going, especially from a DM's point of view. So you don't have to hard write everything and railroad your players, you know, from point A to point B. But my honest-to-goodness advice, because I've just done this for the Pathfinder campaign I started, and I'm really happy with it so far, come up with a beginning, a middle, and an end to your campaign. They can be as vague as humanly possible, but as long as you have an outline of something, when you veer off the road, at least you'll know how to get back on it, because I've ran so many games that basically go nowhere. So that's my pearls of wisdom. Do you have anything to add to that, Eric?
Yeah, I think that when you're talking about what you're essentially talking about is the three-act play structure, which in, you know, Western society, that's how we tell stories. And if you leave out the end when you're trying to tell your story, then people, it's just like watching a movie that's not that way. People don't like those because they're like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. Coming up with an ending, sometimes I've even gone backwards and went from an end point to the beginning just to make sure that I have an ending. Because
so you Tarantino'd it.
Well, not ran it that way, but just, you know, when I was coming up with the design, it was like, okay, I'm going to find out, you know, I want the players to be at this point, so how am I going to get them there? And so that way, right. I intentionally came up with an ending, because so many times, and anybody who's ever played an online game knows this, so many times games just die right in the middle, and you get no sense of closure or no sense of finality with it. So if you if the game master or whoever's writing the story has an ending in mind, they're more apt to continue on running the game to that point.
Right. Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. So there's our tip section for this show, more like infinite pearls of wisdom, if you ask me. and so also our Twitter question for the week. I wanted to change it up again just because I like to be difficult. And last week on Twitter, I ran a little survey, and I asked, I said, we want to know what's the absolute dumbest thing you've seen a GM or a player do in-game. And so I rounded up a couple of my favorite responses from this, and then, Eric, I'm going to ask you to, you know, give me maybe one or two of yours. So my favorite two responses that we got from Twitter were someone told me that they had a couple break up during a game session, like at the table in front of everyone, and it was super awkward, which I can't even imagine the level of awkwardness involved there. So that's my first one. My second one, apparently a girl sent us one, and she said that their DM told them to take a break, and everybody got up to go take a break and, you know, get drinks or whatever and come back. And when they came back, the DM was gone. He was just gone, packed up all his stuff, and left. That's the only context I had. I'm assuming this was a convention game, because if it wasn't, it would have been super awkward. Like, yeah, I'm parked behind you, and I really need to bail right now. So I don't know how that went. And my third one was somebody said their GM was trying to, quote-unquote, create drama by jumping up on his chair. But when he did it, he broke through the seat of the chair and kind of all of his body weight lurched forward, slamming him face first into the table and sending everybody's minis flying everywhere. So there's another, you know, slapstick one for you. So those are my three favorites. So Eric, what's a favorite one or two of yours, like the dumbest, worst, most terrible thing you've ever seen happen during a gaming session?
Well, first of all, let me say about the guy jumping up on his chair. If you have to jump up on your chair to create drama, you deserve what you get. Actually, the strangest or just most awkward moment I think that I've ever had was actually at a convention game where we were playing. It was back in the day of Living Force, if you know what the Living campaign for Wizards of the Coast Star Wars game, and okay. we were playing that that was at Gen Con. And guy sat down and was playing his character. And this is one of those games where you bring a character from home that's already been approved. You've probably played this character many times at other conventions and whatnot. So everybody's very well, you know, entrenched in what their character can do and cannot do. And this guy sits down and starts to play. So he obviously had a character and completely forgot that he was playing Star Wars and started going into Star Trek. And we were like, does this guy know what game he's playing? Does he know where he is? Because he's using his tricorder, and he went to Starfleet Academy, and we were like, what? And we thought first we thought maybe he was joking, but he wasn't joking. So we were like, what is going on with this guy? And nobody really wanted to say anything, because at a con you're more conscientious of the people around you than I think you would be like at your home and things like that, where you'd go, you know, like, dude, what is your problem? Right. So we all just kind of looked at each other like, where did this guy come from? Does he even know what game he's playing? You know, and why did he get to sit down at this game? That was a very odd moment for us where, you know, there was a group of guys ready to play some Star Wars, and this guy's breaking out his Star Trek character. And we were like, I don't know if he knows where he's at.
Oh, man. Yeah. Con games are, you know, I think they're a special one-of-a-kind type of experience, and I don't have that much experience with them. I hope that changes. I also hope I get to sit in on a game like that someday.
Yeah, it was definitely different.
Wow. Well, do you have another one?
Well, actually, it was another Star Wars game at a con where one of the guys on the show, Jason, was playing a scoundrel, and I was playing a noble, and I was playing a coward. I mean, complete coward. Uh-huh. And the game master mistook Jason for me. So when he handed out experience points, he didn't give Jason anything because he said that he was too cowardly through the whole thing. And I thought my friend Jason was going to go over the table at this guy because he had put a lot of thought and effort into this character. And the guy basically called him out at the table, said he was too much of a chicken to get anything.
Oh, wow. how did... Were you like, no, that was me?
No, we just carried Jason out and laughed. We didn't set him straight. We just carried him out and kind of let him simmer down on his own and let the guy think what he thought.
Well, you did the right thing. I've heard that fist fights have happened at conventions before over similar things. So yeah. you took the right way out. But I think that wraps it up for this week. Eric, thanks so much for coming on.
No, man, thank you.
And guys listening, be sure to check out the Gamers Table podcast. They're at gamerstable.com. And you guys, what episode are you guys on? How many have you done?
We just released episode number 73.
All right, episode number 73. So, you know, you guys have got a good back catalog. Check them out. It's a good podcast. I'm to be honest, I'm not really a podcast guy. I don't listen to that many, and I can sit through your podcast and enjoy it. So that says a lot because I don't have patience.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, check us out. Make sure you keep giving us good ratings on iTunes. Check out Gamers Table, and we will talk to you guys next week on what is going on in the world of role-playing games.